A woman is discovered bludgeoned to death. Her husband is convicted of her murder. He claims that an intruder killed his wife. Revolutions in forensic science may help disclose the truth. It is one of the most famous murder cases of the 20th century that inspires the TV series The Fugitive. Some believe an innocent man was wrongfully convicted.
My father's life was destroyed.
It resulted in the death of my mother, who shot herself.
I will never forget that. I will never let you forget that.
The depth of my anger knows no bounds.
Others say justice was served.
To come to any kind of conclusion that there's another person in the room is just not well thought.
This is a story of how advancements in forensic science over almost half a century lead to new clues. Four versions of the murder will be reenacted, each providing a new and shocking twist. Early morning, July 4th, 1954, police respond to a panicked phone call from a wealthy suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. The call has come from the home of a young physician, Dr. Sam Shepard. Inside a gruesome murder scene, Shepard's young wife, Marilyn, beaten to a pulp. Sam and Marilyn Shepard's only son, Sam Jr., was 7 years old when his mother was murdered. He was in the next room.
My recollection is just being awakened by two adults in my bedroom. A policeman stood and blocked my view into the murder room, fortunately. I never saw that. And they took me down the stairs and out the front door. On the threshold of that door, somehow, I felt my universe had been tipped upside down. There was this moment in my life that I knew everything was lost.
The 7-year-old boy has seen and heard nothing. Police need to talk to his father, Dr. Shepard, to get his story. Two experienced homicide detectives are summoned from Cleveland. The coroner has already removed Marilyn's body.
What a mess. Hey, Dr. Gerber, Detective Schottky, this is Detective Carroll.
He tells them that Dr. Shepard is not at home, but in hospital with serious injuries.
Dr. Shepard, we just came from your house. We had a look around, and why don't you tell us exactly what happened last night?
We had the Hearns over for supper. It was a lovely evening.
Dr. Sam Shepard gives the first version of the events, launching one of the most famous and complex murder investigations ever.
Finished eating around 8:30.
Great.
And then we moved to the sitting room to watch a movie on television. Marilyn sat on my lap for a bit before I moved to the sofa to have a snooze.
Around 4:30 a.m., the sleeping Shepard is awakened by a scream.
I charged into the room. Was then struck down. And then the next thing I recall, I came to and had a realization that I'd been struck and that something was wrong. I looked at my wife, and I believe I checked her pulse. And I felt that she was gone. I heard a noise downstairs. I saw a form running from the front door down to the lake.
Shepard says he chases this mysterious killer. He loses his T-shirt in the struggle.
Choking or twisting feeling. This terminated my consciousness. Next thing I knew, I had a groggy recollection of being at the water's edge on my face. I made my way back up the stairs to the house. I felt disoriented, or that I was a victim of a strange dream.
The detectives now head back to the crime scene to look for evidence. They can find no murder weapon. And there are other strange facts.
Oh, absolutely no sign of a forced entry, front or back.
For the cops, Shepard's story of an unknown intruder doesn't make sense.
Anything look like it's been moved?
Somebody's a sportsman. Looks like our guy missed a few things, huh? Pretty tidy burglary.
Yep, or a pretty messy something else.
There are other inconsistencies. The family dog didn't wake up. Neither did Sam Jr.
Check out the mess upstairs.
The t-shirt Dr. Shepard was wearing is missing, and he called friends before the police. Jim Neff is an investigative journalist. He says the detective's suspicions of Shepard was textbook tunnel vision.
In the 1950s, you know, to the police and to outsiders, if you have a murdered wife in bed and there isn't any signs of intrusion, then 19 times out of 20, the chief suspect is going to be the husband.
Sam Shepard's son says it's unthinkable that his father murdered his mother.
I had an idyllic childhood in a lot of ways. I mean, my parents loved me no end. My dad was hugely proud of having the first male grandchild in the family. And he was kind of an American prince in a lot of ways. You know, he had never had anything go wrong in his life. He was the track star and the football star and always got his grades and always had the prettiest women after him. And he was a neurosurgeon or very close to certification to be a brain surgeon at a very young age, in his early 30s. And life was good.
Okay, Dr. Shepard, we appreciate that you're talking to us. I know this is difficult, but we have some questions to ask you.
Was anything of value taken from your house?
I don't know. I didn't have time to check.
But you're sure there was an intruder, right?
Well, yes. He did this to me.
So you phoned the neighbor first, not the police?
It was the first number that came into my head.
Was your wife ever unfaithful?
Oh, my God.
What about you? Were there other women in your life?
No.
Dr. Shepard, you gotta see this from our side. You get burgled, but nothing of value's taken. You struggle with this intruder, but there's no sign of a forced entry. A t-shirt you were wearing is gone. You don't know where. The dog never barked. Your son didn't wake up the whole time that your wife was being killed. Now, I don't know about my partner, but I think you killed your wife.
An autopsy gives them their final proof. The coroner finds 35 wounds on Marilyn's body, including 15 fractures to her skull. Her battered hands indicate a massive struggle against her attacker. The coroner discovers that Marilyn was 4 months pregnant when she died. He concludes that the murder was an act of rage, not a sexual attack. The police are convinced that Dr. Sam Shepard killed his wife, not an unknown intruder. But forensic science will lead to new evidence and a startling discovery. Over 3 weeks after the murder of Marilyn Shepard, Dr. Sam Shepard is arrested. The story sweeps across America of the handsome young doctor charged for a murder he claims an unknown man committed. The press descends on Cleveland. They smell a story when it's discovered that Sam was cheating on Marilyn.
When the element of sex
was injected into this case, it electrified the TV news and the print reporters. It was your classic love triangle. Suddenly, this was much more juicy than your straightforward homicide. This is the old courthouse jail police complex. When Shepard was brought down, people came from miles around, standing on these fences over here, peering in windows, trying to catch a glimpse of this new celebrity. I mean, this case was amazing. It was the first example of where TV journalism created a media frenzy, the new birth of TV news, and it became almost a spectacle, a parade.
This parade will have a major effect on the trial's outcome. The prosecution contends that Dr. Shepard had motive to murder his wife.
We have the picture painted that, of course, Marilyn Shepard and Dr. Sam Shepard lived a perfect compatible life while they were together. Now, this becomes very important in this case. Was that life so happy? Were these relations so compatible all of the time? Was there ever any thought of divorce between these persons? How did Sam Shepard treat his wife? Did he love her? Did he not love her?
The prosecution drives home its case, casting Shepard as a cold-hearted killer. The friendly dinner Sam described in his statement to police was not so friendly after all. Marilyn was smoking.
Marilyn, put it out.
Something that enraged Sam.
Come sit with me.
He drank heavily, which is why he fell asleep on the couch. He awakens just before dawn. He goes upstairs and tries to have sex with Marilyn. She refuses.
You sicken me. You disgust me.
Overcome by rage, he bludgeons her to death. The prosecution contends that the murder weapon was some kind of surgical instrument. Shepard goes to the lake and removes evidence of Marilyn's blood. He ransacks his house to make it look like a burglary. As for Sam's injuries, the prosecution contends they were partly self-inflicted and partly from the struggle with Marilyn. To the jury, it's beginning to look like Sam Shepard did it.
But what happened next? What happened to your t-shirt? How come your dog didn't bark? And so time and time again, it was, I don't know. I have no information. I don't know. And so when you count up all the I don't knows and the knows and the negative responses, it's over 150. And so the impression was he had something to hide. He doesn't know. He's fuzzy on the details.
Then the prosecution produces a witness named Susan Hayes. She proves Shepard is a liar. Here's the motive for murder.
And where did you remain that night?
At the Miller's.
And where did Dr. Sam spend the night?
At the Miller's.
Did you have intimate relations?
Were there other women in your life?
No.
Yes.
During the time that you knew and associated with Dr. Shepard, was the subject of divorce ever mentioned?
Well, he said that he loved his wife very much. But not as a wife. And that he was thinking about getting a divorce.
Suddenly he was looking not only like a liar, but a philanderer. And at least in the minds of 1950s suburban America, it wasn't such a giant step from that to possibly killer of your spouse.
So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury,
They were having these sexual relations in the car and elsewhere. How much respect did Sam Shepard have for his wife while he was doing that? If the defendant is a person who would lie under oath to protect the name of a lady, which he has admitted, how many more lies would he tell to protect his own skin? I knew Marilyn Shepard not, but from the evidence in this case, every indication is that she was a fine and beautiful woman and deserved not the fate that she received at the hands of Sam Shepard on the morning of July the 4th.
The Shepard trial comes to an end in December 1954. After 5 days of deliberation, the judge delivers the jury's verdict to the media mob.
We, the jury in this case, being duly impaneled and sworn, do find the defendant, Sam H. Shepard, not guilty of murder in the first degree, but guilty of murder in the second degree. James C. Byrd, foreman.
Murder in the second degree means Sam Shepard will not go to the electric chair. Dorothy Kilgallen, a journalist from New York, says the media circus poisoned the trial process.
I was aghast at the verdict. It may have been a correct verdict, but it was a verdict wrongly arrived at and therefore frightening. Dr. Shepard may indeed have bludgeoned his wife to death on the morning of July 4th, but the prosecutors for the state of Ohio did not prove he was guilty any more than they proved there were pinheaded men on Mars.
Sam Shepard gets a life sentence for the murder of his wife. It seems the case is closed. Flash forward 50 years. Modern forensic experts say if the crime were committed today, the trial may have had a different outcome. Dr. Cyril Wecht is a coroner in Pittsburgh who's worked on hundreds of murder cases.
The crime scene on July 4th, 1954 in the Shepard case was not properly processed. There were no trained, experienced criminalists called to the scene. The coroner, Dr. Samuel Gerber, was not a criminalist and was not a forensic pathologist. He made observations which were factually incorrect. Harkening back to the question of whether or not this was a sex crime, we find, and this is quite surprising to me, I must say, and I have to be critical of someone who was a top forensic pathologist, that they did not do oral and anal swabs. So this was not then the most thorough and complete forensic scientific undertaking.
Another forensic expert has a medical explanation for Dr. Shepard's fuzzy memories of that night.
With the period of unconsciousness that he sustained and that he attested to when he was first admitted to the hospital, you would expect someone like this to have a concussion. Today we call that a closed head injury. In 1950, we didn't have things like CAT scans or the ability to image the brain in order to see these things specifically. But there is a characteristic pattern of recovery of mentation, a recovery of memory, recovery of an understanding of the events that happen that occur as the brain recovers from that closed head injury.
But in 1954, Sam Shepard has no such evidence on his side. 50 years later, in a rare television interview, Dr. Shepard's brother Stephen says his brother's conviction was the most devastating event of his life.
The impact of Sam's conviction not only destroyed Sam and turned him into a very different person than the one who was charged with the crime, it resulted in the death of my mother, who shot herself in our master bedroom using my gun. My father died of a hemorrhaging gastric ulcer. Tom Reese, Marilyn's father, shot himself with a shotgun in a cheap motel room in East Cleveland. Angry? The depth of my anger knows no bounds.
Sam Shepard has gone to jail on circumstantial evidence. There's only one way to prove that an unknown murderer killed Marilyn: forensic science.
So after the trial was over, they did what they should have done during trial from a defense lawyer's point of view, which was they hired the best forensic expert in the country, Dr. Paul Kirk.
Kirk is his generation's forensic pioneer.
He said, now wait a minute, I'm not on your side. You're paying me, I'm taking your money. I'm gonna examine stuff and I'm gonna give you my report. And wherever that points, that's where it's gonna be.
Can crude 1950s forensic science clear Sam Shepard? What Kirk discovers leads to another theory and another suspect. In January 1955, Dr. Paul Kirk returns to the Shepherd home, which has been sealed for 6 months. He has a rare opportunity to revisit a closed crime scene with forensic evidence intact. Dr. Kirk is pioneer of a forensic technique known as blood spatter analysis. He examines the shape, size, and pattern of the blood found throughout Marilyn's room. Kirk's objective is to reconstruct the crime based on science, not speculation. Peter DeForest is a former student of Dr. Kirk's.
Well, the bloodstain pattern stuff was one aspect of the reconstruction that Dr. Kirk undertook. And one of the key parts of that was that Dr. Kirk noticed that there was an overall pattern, what we call a radial pattern, of spatter from the bludgeoning.
Kirk connects the trajectories of blood droplets originating from Marilyn's head spattered on all four walls. He determines that smaller droplets on the walls are from the blood-covered murder weapon, cast off as the killer bludgeoned Marilyn. These droplets reveal two critical new facts. One, the killer would himself have been covered in blood spatter. Dr. Sam Shepard was not. Two, the murderer is left-handed. Shepard is right-handed. Then Dr. Kirk sees something unusual.
Dr. Kirk noticed a larger, different shaped droplet stain that seemed out of place. And so that was one that he thought may have been the result of the assailant bleeding.
Dr. Kirk recalls that Marilyn's teeth had been broken in the attack. He now theorizes that she must have bitten her assailant. Dr. Shepard had no open wounds. Is Sam Shepard innocent after all? Kirk turns his attention to a trail of blood on the stairs. The police concluded this came from a dripping murder weapon. But Dr. Kirk proved that the spots would get smaller if they came from a blood-soaked object. Those on the Shepard staircase are the same size. The four universal blood types are A, B, AB, and O. Kirk determines the foreign blood is blood type O, same type as Marilyn's. But further tests show that the blood is not hers, and Sam is type A. Dr. Kirk concludes that the blood is from a third person. Kirk is certain this is no domestic homicide. It's a sex slaying.
Dr. Kirk wrote a very detailed, groundbreaking forensic document that all the pieces sort of fit together for the first time. Suddenly, Dr. Sam's story had scientific validity in Dr. Kirk's interpretation of the physical evidence.
Dr. Kirk's findings present a version of events that supports Sam Shepard's strange story. With Dr. Shepard asleep downstairs, a mystery attacker enters the bedroom. He sexually assaults Marilyn. She fights back, biting him. This is probably when she screams. He bludgeons her with an object, possibly a flashlight. Dr. Shepard enters. They fight, and the killer flees. Dr. Kirk has given Sam Shepard new faith that he will soon be set free.
The report is terrific. It proves my innocence beyond all question. Kirk's thoroughness shows what a great scientist he is. I'm so fired up now, I can't sleep.
Kirk is an outsider to Cleveland's inner circle of lawyers, judges, and forensic scientists. The judge stands by the meager forensics that convicted Sam Shepard. It's back to square one.
I used to visit him in a dungeon, literally in a big room, halfway buried under the ground, dark, except for a naked light bulb at the end of the room, in the shadows, guards patrolling behind our backs with drawn batons to beat on us if we did anything wrong.
Sam Shepard has run out of options and hope. He languishes for 8 years before the infamous murder becomes famous. In 1963, the public's fascination with the Marilyn Shepard murder case is revived by television. The Fugitive becomes the most popular series on American TV. It's the story of a doctor wrongly convicted of killing his wife who goes on the run to catch the true killer. Its final episode is the highest rated program in TV history until it's beaten out by Dallas in 1980.
The Fugitive transformed the Shepard case into a worldwide phenomenon. It kept the case alive and kept it in the public eye and made it notorious enough and with enough publicity potential for a young man by the name of F. Lee Bailey, for example, to approach the case and realize that it would be a springboard for his fame and fortune, which it was.
10 years since the trial, F. Lee Bailey rekindles the media spectacle based on a new fact. Journalist Dorothy Kilgallen was in the Cleveland courthouse in 1954. She tells Bailey that the Shepard case was a show trial.
When she came down to cover the trial, she was such a celebrity that Judge Blythen invited her into his chambers because he wanted to meet her.
Glad to see you, Miss Kilgallen. I watch you on television very frequently.
And when he asked her, my goodness, what brings you all the way from New York to Cleveland for this little murder trial? She said, well, my gosh, everyone is talking about it. It's the most famous case, and it's a big murder mystery.
It's a mystery as to who did it.
Mystery. It's an open and shut case.
What do you mean?
Well, he's guilty as hell. There's no doubt about it.
And I'm paraphrasing her, but he said, murder mystery? What do you mean? Everyone knows he's guilty as hell. Well, she didn't share that story with her newspaper readers in 54, but she did tell the story, and it came to the ears of Lee Bailey.
Bailey digs around and learns Kilgallen's story is true. He takes this new evidence of the judge's bias to the media.
We filed what is called a petition for a writ of habeas corpus, which asks that he be released because his constitutional rights had been violated. And it came on before Federal Judge Carl A. Wineman in southern Ohio. He found that the judge who heard the case was a prejudiced man and not been fair to Sam at all. Furthermore, that he didn't keep control of his courtroom.
In 1964, 10 years after Marilyn's murder, Sam Shepard is released, filled with malice.
How much did it cost you?
10 years.
Well, in money, sir.
Money could not possibly repay me for my mother's life. How much would it cost to bring her back? My father. My father-in-law.
He makes no mention of his murdered wife. He is not free. The state of Ohio decides to retry him. In 1966, Shepard goes on trial for the second time for the murder of his wife.
I think I can purely, absolutely vindicate myself.
The first case was built on scandal. Finally, 10-year-old forensic evidence is presented that was not heard at the original trial. The jury is presented with critical facts. The killer is left-handed. The blood on the stairs is from an unknown person, not Sam or Marilyn. So is the blood on the wall. And Marilyn's murder is a sex slave, not the act of an enraged husband. This time, forensic evidence outplays sexual scandal. The jury acquits. Sam Shepard is finally a free man.
Get the hell out of the way.
He tries to return to his former life as a surgeon, but 10 years in prison have taken a heavy toll.
Obviously drinking too much vodka, a quart a day minimum,
And he was an alcoholic.
Two patients die under the knife. He's disbarred from practice.
Well, he was taking uppers to wake up in the morning and downers to go to sleep at night.
His own family does not recognize him.
He'd come over to visit us and put his fist through the wall because he was frustrated and angry. I'd say, well, that's enough of that. Goodbye.
In 1970, just 6 years after his release, Sam Shepard dies. He's just 46 years old.
The last few times I met with him, he knew he was going to die soon, and he just wanted to reassure me that he had confidence in me, that I mean, that's the only reason he lived. I mean, he would have committed suicide in 1954 or 55 if he hadn't had a son on the outside, because he loved my mother and his life was devastated and he had no reason to live. The only reason he stayed alive was so that I could survive.
The true story behind the fugitive might have died along with Sam Shepard, but the public's imagination and a new generation of forensic experts keep it alive. The identity of the unknown suspect can finally be revealed. The final version of the Marilyn Shepard murder mystery takes 40 years to emerge. By 1990, Sam Rhys Shepard has given up hope of finding the mystery attacker that his father claimed killed his mother.
I had a nervous breakdown, essentially. It took me 20 years to cry for my mother. And that's what the nervous breakdown was about, that I had never consciously cried for her death.
Then, a journalist in New York calls Sam Jr. with news he's not sure he wants to hear.
I grew up in Cleveland, and so I always had an interest in the Shepard case and had a fascination about it. And my mother came to visit me at one point and mentioned that someone had been arrested for another murder, who had worked in the Shepard home. That person was Richard Eberling. Richard Eberling was a very troubled man. He had a troubled childhood. He was in foster homes. He was diagnosed as being psychotic at age 9.
Cynthia Cooper discovers that Eberling's father had died of poisoning. His son is suspected, but police can't prove it. She meets Eberling in prison, serving a life sentence for murdering an old woman.
He fantasized mightily about being in a family. He would steal figurines. And he would take them home and arrange them in little family clusters. Both in his correspondence and in person, he was a very creepy guy. He made confessory statements. He would interrupt an ordinary conversation in kind of a bizarre way. Like one time we were talking and he suddenly said, "Why do women fight back when they're raped?"
Has the case that will never die finally been solved? Is Richard Eberling Marilyn Shepard's murderer?
So Richard Eberling changed windows, screen windows, did some odd jobs for Marilyn Shepard. And in my interviews with him, he had this obsessive relationship with her. He viewed her as sort of the perfect mom that he never had. He described her as being so virginal and pure. And on the other hand, he also described how tight her shorts were and how she had this California look. So he kind of had that classic virgin whore dichotomy, his image of Marilyn Shepard.
In 1959, Eberling was arrested for burglary. The police found rings that belonged to Marilyn Shepard. He admits he took them, and even admits it might be his blood at the crime scene.
And then the detective said, this was just a wild shot, "Well, what was your blood doing over there?" And Richard Eberling said, "Oh, well, I cut myself. I cut my hand when I was putting in the storm windows, pulling one of the pins out of the windows to slide the window in. I cut myself and I dripped all over the house. And so here he is in 1959 with Marilyn Shepard's rings, obsessed with Marilyn Shepard. Then in a lucky stroke, admitting, just sort of conned into saying, my blood is all over the house, and then coming up with a story about how it got there.
By 1959, the Shepard case was closed, so Eberling was released. Then in 1987, Richard Eberling is linked to another murder. For Jim Neff, images from the crime are suspiciously familiar.
If you see the photos of the murder scene, she's on a bed, her night clothes are pushed up, her private parts are exposed, and it's bloody splatter all over the walls. So I looked at those and I was just struck by the remarkable similarity between the photos of the Marilyn Shepard body in the crime scene and Myrtle Frey's body in her crime scene.
Sam Shepard described the murderer as bushy-haired. Eberling is not, but he has had a lifelong compulsion for toupees. Part of his criminal pathology.
When you asked him to describe the scene and what it looked like, or the property, he was able to give precise and exact descriptions. He was able to tell you details that had not been released publicly. He was able to describe the scene really in a way and with an intensity that only somebody who's actually seeing it can describe.
Sam Rhys Shepard has spent a lifetime trying to forget. But once he learns of the Eberling evidence, he is compelled to resurrect an incident that destroyed his life. He decides to put together a legal challenge against the state of Ohio for the wrongful imprisonment of his father.
Legally speaking, my dad's life was still tainted with this wrongful conviction.
Terry Gilbert is Sam Jr.'s lawyer.
So there's so much here that can be examined. Forensic psychology, forensic trauma, forensic blood spatter, DNA, skin mark wounds. All this, when you take it all together, really points to the fact that somebody else murdered Marilyn Shepard.
Gilbert decides to tackle the old evidence with the newest in forensic science, DNA profiling. There's a slim hope the DNA in the 40-year-old blood has not degraded over time. The coroner who conducted the original autopsy is dead, but his family has kept Marilyn's samples in a safe. It's a stroke of luck. DNA is best preserved in a dry place. Dr. Mohammed Tahir is the DNA specialist who analyzes the samples. He makes a startling discovery. The vaginal swab from Marilyn's autopsy contains sperm. Tahir lifts DNA from stamps on love letters Sam wrote to Marilyn. He determines for certain it is not Sam Shepard's sperm. He also tests the mysterious blood stain on the wall. Does the DNA match Richard Eberling? Tahir chooses his words carefully.
My analysis of DNA does not tell who killed or who did not kill her. The only thing I'm seeing is that the evidence does tell that these stains did not originate from Sam or Marilyn.
DNA also confirms that the blood droplets on the stairs did not come from Sam or Marilyn. And the blood stain on Sam's pants is likewise not from him or his wife.
Again, Eberling cannot be excluded.
So we're left with the definite possibility from a scientific standpoint, specifically DNA, that Eberling could well have been the person who attacked Marilyn Shepard. You have him in that house, we know, a couple of days before, so that he was familiar with it. You have a man who was subsequently convicted of the murder of another individual.
Has a decades-old crime finally been solved? For Neff, the new forensic evidence confirms his version of events back in 1954.
On July 4th, Richard Eberling drove his car over to Huntington Park, two blocks from the Shepherd home, and parked it. He crept down to the beach and crawled along the sand up through the back stairs to the Shepherd home. He was obsessed with Marilyn Shepherd. He crept into the house in the dark. He knew the house well as the yard. Here was the object of his obsession.
No. Eberling sexually assaults Marilyn. She fights back.
She bit the hand covering her mouth. He carried a flashlight with him to get into the house. He was a sadistic, brutal killer who was taking his time. He enjoyed watching people die. He had said that again later in life.
When Sam enters, Eberling strikes him down and flees.
He saw a white form with bushy hair. Eberling Balding often wore wigs.
In this version, Sam's story of chasing an unknown intruder proves true.
It was Eberling. He chased him to the beach. Eberling dragged him into the water with his t-shirt, either stripping the shirt or using the shirt to clean himself from all the spattered blood, and left Dr. Sam.
Had they put Richard Eberling on trial and tried him for this murder or even interrogated him about it, I have no doubt that he would have been found guilty. All of the evidence points to him.
Sam Rhys Shepherd finally believes he has found his mother's true murderer. But his quest to vindicate his father would take one final dramatic turn. In January 2000, the third trial in the murder of Marilyn Shepherd begins.
Finally, after 45 and a half years, the truth will be told to you in this courtroom.
What we need to do and what we've tried to do all along is to look at the science. Yes, the forensic science is complicated. Yes, the technology is complicated. It's very difficult sometimes for juries to understand this.
Bill Mason is the prosecutor who represents the state of Ohio. He prepares his own forensic expert to counter the Shepherd team.
Our expert's analysis says this blood was contaminated from the 50 years. It was just not properly handled. And to come to any kind of conclusion that there's another person in the room is just not well thought.
Cyril Wecht testifies that this murder was the act of a sexual predator, not an enraged husband.
Here is Marilyn with the pajama top pulled up, the pajama bottom down onto one leg. To any casual observer, let alone a trained forensic pathologist or criminalist, one has to immediately think that this is strongly suggestive of a sexual assault.
The state argues that it's textbook domestic homicide.
Why do men beat their wives? If you can answer that, you can solve the world's problems. My suggestion is that I thought maybe he went up that night to have sex with her and she rejected him and he went off.
You sicken me! You disgust me!
I don't know. But something set off that violence that evening.
Mason is determined to prove that Sam Shepherd murdered his wife and bring a 45-year-old mystery to an end. In the third Sam Shepherd trial, modern forensic opinion is applied to half-century-old investigative methods. In the earlier trials, prosecutors had argued that Sam Shepherd faked his injuries. But one forensic expert now contends that this is impossible.
In my opinion, there was no way these wounds could have been self-inflicted, nor could they have been staged. That was the other accusation that was leveled regarding these injuries.
Bill Mason makes a controversial counterclaim that the x-rays are not of Shepherd.
There was claims that he had broken neck, and they had x-rays to show that there was a broken neck. Well, the coroner at the time, Dr. Gerber, was very unbelieving about the broken neck. So he went to Bayview Hospital and had some separate x-rays made up of Sam's neck and spine, and there was no break in the neck.
Gilbert aims to convince the jury that the psychotic Richard Eberling killed Marilyn, not Sam.
The brutality was the kind of attack that is the earmark of a sexually sadistic psychopath. To look at Dr. Shepard and to seriously suggest that he would kill his wife in this matter is ludicrous.
Eberling links himself to the crime in a prison interview.
I asked him why he thought that Marilyn Shepard's pajamas had been pulled down and her bed clothing was disturbed, and he was like, well, I don't know, it couldn't have happened while she was kicking and thrashing.
Dr. Tahir presents the DNA evidence linking Eberling to the scene. Mason says there is too much sample contamination to prove that Eberling was the killer.
DNA was not discovered and used in a courtroom until 1992. And people didn't care for the DNA and they didn't handle DNA properly. My analysis is, and our expert's analysis is, this blood was contaminated from the 50 years. It was just not properly handled.
Jim Neff was at the trial. He understood Tahir's evidence, but the jury didn't.
The best evidence at the trial was this one-inch blood spot that was found on the wall just next to Marilyn Shepard's bed. It's a contact stain. In other words, it didn't fly off the murder weapon because it was too big. This blood was located in a box years later in Dr. Kirk's archives, and it was tested. And of all the DNA tests, this was the best specimen because it was the only one that could be explained by only two contributors. And this was an overlap of Marilyn Shepard's blood and blood that matched Richard Eberling's profile. That point was not made very clearly to the jury. I was there. They didn't understand that. I know that from interviewing them later. So that was a missed opportunity.
Then Mason drops his own forensic bombshell. The original investigation of the blood smear on the wall found it to be type O, not from Sam or Marilyn. But Richard Eberling is type A. Unless Kirk was wrong, there is no explanation for this forensic riddle.
You can argue, gee, it was never absolutely shown to the exclusion of the entire world that the blood and the semen came from Eberling. You certainly can demonstrate that there was a third person. So once you have established that, really, that is the same as saying that Sam Shepard was not the killer.
The question is, will the jury understand the complex science? After just 4 hours of deliberation, a verdict for the third time in the half-century-old murder mystery.
We, the jury, being duly impaneled, do hereby find for the defendant the state of Ohio. Ladies and gentlemen, is that your verdict?
Yes, sir.
Sam Shepard, dead for 30 years, is once again found to be the murderer of his wife. Terry Gilbert is shocked and disillusioned with the verdict.
We had hoped that we could come back to where this all happened and somehow allow them to purge themselves of this dark history, to come clean, so to speak, to own up, to show some accountability, to show some sympathy to this family that was totally destroyed.
Sam Reese Shepard clings to his belief that his father did not kill his mother.
We are bloodied but unbowed, just as my father was. My father's life was destroyed by the state of Ohio. I will never forget that. I will never let you forget that.
I don't know of any individual or any case that has had three trials in this country. It's been up to the Supreme Court of Ohio. It's been up to the Supreme Court of the United States and back. I mean, there is nothing more to do with this case. It's over.
Jim Neff gets one final tantalizing clue when interviewing Richard Eberling in prison.
So we sat down and he was in a wheelchair across from me, and I'm talking to Richard Eberling about Marilyn Sheppard once again. And he said something. He said, I was in the room and, oh, I just couldn't believe all the blood. And that's in effect what he said to me, and I was stunned. Thinking, oh my God, he's put himself in the murder room.
Richard Eberling dies 2 weeks later. Barring another forensic breakthrough, we will never know if Eberling killed Marilyn Sheppard or someone else, or if it was Dr. Sam Sheppard all along.